to the Section 5 podcast.
Welcome back to the Section 5 podcast. This is Mark here. I'm here with G and Trey. We're in a bit of an odd time right now. No need to say. I'm sure you're all kind of getting adjusted, but it's one that we'll no doubt be talking about for years and probably generations to come. The world is essentially shut down while we try to minimize the coronavirus pandemic, and it left most of us looking for ways to pass the time. So that's going to be the theme for today's episode. We're going to do exactly that this time around. We're going to just pass the time. The NBA is in the same spot it was in the last time we recorded an episode, and it's left the NBA world searching for ways to get their basketball fix. We'll be getting into how we've done that, some recommendations, and some of the positives coming out of this situation. But first, we'll go around the room real quick. How's everyone doing? It's been a little bit. I know it's real life has kind of really gotten in the way of things, but gee, how's everything looking on your end?
Honestly, I mean, I'm healthy. My 10-year-old's healthy. My 10-month-old is healthy. My wife's healthy. You know, so far, no one that I'm aware of has tested positive for the coronavirus. I mean, the way somebody else put it is that when, you know, 70 or 80 years ago during World War II, when people were being asked to go overseas, we're just being asked to stay home. Right. So I'm not going to complain about that. You know, I do miss basketball. I live by North Station, which is a very busy area typically, and I just came from outside and there's literally nobody outside. So it's just been kind of airy in terms of you realize how much of a social, you know, species we are as human beings. Right. When you take away all the interaction, it's like it kind of throws you off. But, you know, I've been passing the time. I kind of played around with the idea of the pod name before Section 5 being called Shooting the Shit, sort of a basketball reference. But now, yeah. Like, Shooting the Shit is very relevant because
that's what we're going to need to do for the next hour tonight, for sure.
Shoot the shit. So.
Yeah. All right, Trey, how's everything on your end?
I mean, I've been pretty good just maintaining my health. Everybody in my house is healthy. I still have to go to work right now because I'm considered an essential worker.
Yeah, you never think that it would be kind of a detriment to you to have someone call you essential. You're like, hey, you're really essential. You're like, oh, fuck. But it's where we are. I mean,
that's all right. When the next CBA comes out for you, Trey.
Right.
Demand more paper.
Yeah. And you know, on my end, same. Everything's good here. Everyone's healthy. Everyone's continuing as you know best we can. I'm working from home, which is great. I'm one of the lucky few who's able to pretty much fully function in my day job from home, so not really missing a beat there. Don't have to worry about how am I going to pay this rent or these bills or anything, so definitely blessed in that regard. But from serious shit to less serious stuff, but something that we all come to love, the NBA. It's been more than 2 weeks since we've had NBA basketball. Adam Silver had said a couple of days or maybe a day or so after the league was put on that seemingly abrupt hiatus that it looks like it'll be about 30 days. Hmm. It looks like now we're about halfway through that and it's going to be longer, I would think. If it were going to be 30 days, you would think they're going to have to start practicing, like real practice, not just shooting around or going for workouts individually with social distancing in the next week or so. And we just don't look on track for that. So it looks like we're going to be without basketball for a while. No games in the foreseeable future. No games since the last pod. Well, what are we going to talk about? Well, we've seen it all over the place. CSN, I called it CSN, NBC Sports Boston, whatever it's called this week. NBA TV, Free League Pass. Finding games on your own, whether it's on YouTube or other resources. Everybody's watching old basketball, right? We're diving into games from earlier this season, games from when we were kids, games from before we were born, watching players that we've never seen before or players that we don't have much of a memory of. So I know you've all been doing this a little bit. What have you been watching? Trey, let's start with you. Where have you been going for your basketball fix?
So I've been watching a lot of Paul Pierce highlights. Because that's what I grew up on.
Right. That's your guy.
that's pretty much my guy. So I've been going back looking at a lot of old Celtics games from 08 up until 2013 and just looking at how close we got each year. So, right. For example, I watched 2012, it was game 5, Celtics Heat. The game where we go, I think we were home in Boston. I'm not too sure. Actually, no, we might have been on the road in Miami. It was game 5 because we would have had to go back.
Right.
And they were in Miami. It was game 5. We won. Paul Pierce had a pretty good game. And that was the game before LeBron came and went off.
Right.
He just took over. And just something's just telling me, like, if Paul and all those guys could go back and give it one more effort, how close the game would be. Because I don't think anybody was stopping LeBron that night because he came in with a mission. But right. If you could really dig deep and understand that, all right, LeBron's going to go off tonight like we've never seen before, I got to give it, you know, this one last time to fight him off. Would have been interesting to see if anything would have changed. But, yeah, I've been just watching a lot of old games. That's just one of them that I've been watching.
Yeah, and are you doing a lot of full games? Or are you doing, you know, highlight reels, a little bit of both?
So the thing about me is I feel like I can't sit through like a whole game.
Right. You know the outcome. You know what happened. You can't, it's tough to watch. No, I totally get that.
Just a lot of clips I've been watching.
Yeah. All right, cool. And G, what about you? Are you going to the same realm that Trey's going to with the recent success, or you're a little older, you're my age. So
yeah.
You got some stuff from your youth. That's interesting too. I'm curious to see where you decided to go.
You know, for the most part, I mean, even before all this stuff went down, I'm someone who maybe even talked about it in previous pods. Like, I go on YouTube and watch old school games pretty often.
Yeah.
Nothing excites me more than a Celtics-Lakers game. So generally, you know, that's what I'm looking up, especially right after the time when Kobe passed. You know, I was watching a lot of Celtics-Lakers games. Yeah. But my internet TV provider does not have NBA TV. So I haven't caught a ton of those games. Yeah, I have Hulu. There's no NBA TV on Hulu.
Okay.
So really, I've been relying on NBC Sports Boston and those Celtics games that they've been streaming.
Yeah.
Friday night, they showed Game 6, Celtics-Lakers. As far as
2008 Game 6?
2008 Game 6, okay. June 17th, 617.
Yep. Now that, I watched the entire thing.
I did too. I actually got that on demand.
Celebration because, and everything.
Through NBA TV, yeah. With the Hardwood Classics.
I am doing a podcast from home, so you may or may not hear screaming, babies crying, television. You might hear all sorts of stuff in the background. Sorry.
It adds authenticity because we don't have the editing chops to dump it, so yeah. It's just going to be there.
Dogs barking and all that. I've been relying on NBC Sports Boston. Other than that, you know, I've been doing a lot of Euro stepping through my living room. I've been shooting balls of socks in my laundry basket.
A lot of margin of error there. Well, you know, yeah, small ball, yeah. Big basket. So
yeah, man, it's just you know,
keep the fundamentals though. You got to make sure you're still building the C, or your shot's going to be shit when you get down on the court.
I mean, I'm literally to the point. I mean, I advise everyone to stay at home and practice social distancing, but I'm going to go to the park and shoot around a little bit in the next day or two.
If you're there by yourself, it's totally safe.
Yeah, it's not like I'm running full courts. There's really nobody outside. So, you know, I'm going to do that. I did catch the Anything's Possible documentary about the 2008 C's. I caught the documentary about Best of Enemies, the Celtics Lakers one.
Okay, great.
I'm really, really anticipating the 90s Chicago Bulls one coming out on ESPN.
Yeah, the 30 for is it a 30 for 30?
Yes, I believe it's a 30 for 30. I'm really anticipating that. And
speaking of 30 for 30s, the Celtics Lakers 3-part rivalry one was on ABC this afternoon.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. The best.
Oh, that's one. Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking of maybe one that like that NBC Sports Boston did, but
no,
they've done some stuff too, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched most of that today. It's a great take. I do have one gripe with that I want to jump in on though. Hmm. If you're building a history of the Celtics Lakers documentary, mm-hmm. all the way from the Minneapolis Lakers and their titles that LA claims, mm-hmm. through Russell, through Havlicek, through Bird, right? You got Bird Magic. Why the hell are you not having a clip of Magic Johnson at the Garden at Larry Bird night, opening up his Lakers warm-up, and showing a Celtics t-shirt. That has to be in there.
Wow. I mean, that's an all-time NBA moment. I'm surprised that one wasn't in there.
I was watching that the first time I saw that. I was watching it through and I was just like, oh, this is going to be good. I'm really curious how they work this in, how they word it. Do they just let it sit? Do they give commentary? And they just didn't do it. I think they showed like still shots or clips from Larry Bird night, but they didn't show the shirt underneath Magic's.
Oh, that's crazy. I remember that.
Yeah. So other than that, it was excellent. It was really well done. I love how they had like Boston and LA celebrities trading off, narrating Ice Cube, the lesser of the Wahlbergs, going and really giving it the city's touch. So that's a great take. I definitely recommend that if anyone hasn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the old games, I've been diving into a lot of stuff from like our childhood, like stuff from the 90s, early 90s. I've been watching a lot of Reggie Lewis. I watched a game from, I think, 89 against the Bulls, where there were a couple of guys for the Celtics out. I think Bird was out. And Lewis went for close to 30, and Jordan went for 42, I think. Was this
through NBA TV or?
No, this was just on YouTube.
Okay. All right, cool.
So there's a bunch of full games there. You got to know what you're looking for. You can't really browse. Yeah. But I just threw in like Reggie Lewis. I Googled Reggie Lewis in Chicago and looked at game logs and was like, all right, let's see if I can find these couple. So that one was really interesting to watch. There were some names of guys who played for the Celtics who I had never even heard of, like guys who had played half a season. So it was cool to see that. And one that I watched that I really want to talk about a little bit is the last game at the Garden, the old Garden. Celtics Magic, mm-hmm. Game 4, 1995. The Magic were the one seed that year, and they went on to the finals. They lost to Houston.
Yep.
The Celtics with Dino Raja, Dominique Wilkins, and then a couple of good role players. D-Brown had a hell of a series, Sherman Douglas. They gave the Magic all they can handle. They lost in four, but they missed a three to tie the game at the buzzer. So, like, they gave the one seed their best shot.
Was that first round?
It was first round. Yep. Okay. It was a 1-8.
Yep.
And they came reasonably close to pulling that off, even though they lost the series 3-1. And they, they made it tough. They weren't an easy out. They weren't the typical 1-8. If you take Reggie Lewis and drop him on that team, right, with Dominique and Dino, that's a formidable big three. That's possibly three Hall of Famers.
Can we drop Len Bias on that team as well?
We can. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it completely changes everything if you do that, but we think. I mean, but that's years after the fact. I mean, we lost Reggie like 2 years before that game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he was so damn close to being on that team. Obviously, the bigger story is an athlete dies in his prime, but we could have had a whole different landscape of the Eastern Conference just based on watching that game. Cause that team was good. They were scrappy. They had some high end talent, but they just didn't have enough to get by, the likes of Shaq and Penny in their primes. And watching Shaq with a baby face is just fucking hilarious. Like, you got to go back and do it.
Yeah.
If that happens though, do we get Paul Pierce?
Probably not.
I mean, he slid to 10, but
I don't think
my X-Men reference comes in. You know, if you go back in time and change one thing, it changes. Right.
It's the butterfly effect. It changes everything.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. But you might steal a championship when Jordan's out.
Yeah. During those 2 years.
That's the thing.
During that little hiatus.
Right. And if you're saying, okay, now we're talking bigger picture, right? You trade Pierce and all that came out of that. Mm-hmm. And you trade it for a couple of years with Reggie with a team that we know was decent. Yeah, add a star to it, who knows, right? Yeah, I'm not taking that risk in a basketball sense because we have the championship in the bank, but it just made me really curious, like, what happens without the chain reaction afterwards? If we have Reggie Lewis on that team, forgetting about even Len Bias, like, that team was – the Celtics team, they were pretty deep. They had solid pros pretty far down the bench, and then Eric Montross playing real minutes, which was horrifying. But
was Rick Fox on that team?
Rick Fox was. Rick Fox was hurt during that series, so he didn't play in that game. But yeah, Fox was on that team. It's just like an interesting thought that I had. I watched a bunch of games from that era. I watched another one that really opened my eyes to something. I watched a Nets Celtics regular season game from 1992. I think it was January 92. Reggie Lewis and Drazen Petrovic just in an absolute battle. Mikhail, Parrish, and Bird were all injured that game. So it was Reggie's team for that game, essentially. And Petrovic and Derek Coleman and I believe rookie Kenny Anderson on the Nets with some other good role players. You know, Chris Morris was on that team, was a pretty good player. But Drazen Petrovic is so much better than I remember, because I don't have much of a memory of him. He passed away when I was 10, and he played out of, you know, out of the local area where you couldn't really get access to the games that much. Yeah. But this guy could do everything on the offensive end. He was an absolute machine. And it was like, there's a lot of stuff that we can learn by going back and watching these games.
Yeah, I encourage, you know, particularly in the Twitter era where, you know, people have such a short memory. There are people who, you know, will make arguments for other players against Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? And it's definitely an opportunity for, like, people to go back, educate themselves, expand their sort of the breadth of their basketball expertise and watch some of these players. You know, it's very difficult to compare eras. I really try to stay away from comparing eras. There are a few players like a Bill Russell or a Michael Jordan that, regardless of what era they were playing in, they would be one of the elite players in the game. But yeah, I mean, to your point, when you do watch some of those old games and those old highlights, you realize, oh man, I forgot about that guy.
Yeah,
like he was really good. You know, and then it makes you sort of reevaluate all those lists that we start putting out there.
Right.
You know, the best this, best that, top this, top that. So hopefully these kids out here stop disrespecting the game. I mean, I don't want to be an old fogey. I would like to, you know, put myself like a Larry Bird has been a guy who's always embraced the future. Right. He's never been like, oh, back in my days, like I remember during, you know, when they had the Dream Team documentary, he pointed at Magic and said, yeah, you know, it's his league now, talking about Michael Jordan and those guys. But yeah, still though, I think it's definitely an opportunity for people to go back, watch some old film, watch some old school players, and really just expand their knowledge of not just the game itself, but impact players throughout the history of the league.
Right. And the biggest takeaway that I had from watching those games that kind of weren't that long ago, but in another angle, like they really were a long time ago, you know, those early 90s games, is it almost looks like a different sport, right?
Yeah.
It's so different. There's no spacing. Everybody's underneath the basket. These players are just as skilled. They're just as athletic for the most part. Like LeBron is an absolute freak. It doesn't matter what generation it is, whether it's this one, the last one, or 20 years from now, we're not getting another LeBron. They don't make them like that. So comparing, saying like, oh, well, there was no LeBron in this era. Like, no shit, there was no LeBron in that era. There's no Wilt in this era, and there's no Russell in this era, and there's no Shaq in this era. Like, those guys are so unique that you're not going to get players like that in every era.
Even 2008. Even go back to 2008 and that NBA Finals and those Celtics-Pistons matchups in the playoffs. It was a different game then.
It was.
You just didn't see. I mean, when I was playing basketball, when I was younger, you know, if you took a pull-up three, particularly on a fast break, you were going to the bench.
Right.
There was no pull-up threes unless it was like a set play. And so much of the game was, you know, the game has extended a good 10 feet beyond where it was just in 2008, 12 years ago, to the point where even a LeBron, and I give him credit, you know, at this age and this stage in his career, now he's taking 30-foot three-pointers.
Right. He's evolving, which is just wild.
I'll never forget. What was it? Was it 2011 or was it 2012? And Chris Bosh started shooting all the threes.
Yeah.
And I told myself, if KG takes one step out and just starts shooting threes, he'll make a bunch of them.
That might have
never
been 2011.
Yep.
Yeah. It's tough for guys like KG to do that because – they always say, like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, right? KG had been playing that game his whole life. He was at the end of his career. To say, all right, let's start shooting threes now, like, that's a lot tougher to do when someone's, you know, in their mid-30s as opposed to someone who's, you know, 26, 27 and playing in the league for a little bit.
I think he could have done it. I think
he could have, but it's a lot more difficult, especially back then where that was more of a new thing. And it's weird to look at 2012 or 13 as a big difference or a big changing of the guard in the NBA, but it, looking back at it, it really was. And to have a guy who has had so much success doing what he did to change his game even a little bit, like that's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it wasn't broken for Garnett by any means. So he didn't really need that. Knowing what we know now, yes, he would have been a better player had he been able to consistently hit that shot. And he probably could have, because his, you know, his mid-range jumper was, you know, was great, for, especially for a guy his size. So you take two steps back and now you get an extra point for it. You can hit him at roughly the same rate. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So on those players, whether it's guys from the 90s or guys from, you know, the early 2000s or what have you, they could all shoot at a similar level. Like they had the ability to shoot from deep. It's just, you didn't do it. And I want to go back to Petrovic for a second. Petrovic would be, I think, a superstar in today's game. He shot 44% from three in 91-92, his second last year. And he was shooting 3.5 threes per game. 3.5 threes per game was a ton back then. But there's clips of him taking not quite the Curry shot from like the edge of the logo, but 4 or 5 feet beyond the arc, he's just launching them, and he's, you know, and he's hitting them. It looks like a guy playing today. Now, if you give him 8 to 10 threes per game, which he would be taking now, that guy's going to be at the top of the league in scoring. And there's a lot of guys who could do that. A lot of the bigs could knock down a jumper. You know, Robert Parrish could hit a jumper. Dino Raja could hit a baseline jumper. Even Mark Blunt, who we laugh at all the time, but his baseline jumper was money. Like these guys could shoot. They just, it just wasn't the game back then. You go in with your back to the basket and you shoot a contested shot. You don't think, well, it's open from 18. Well, 12 feet's closer, so if there's a hand in my face, it should still be an easier shot because it's only 12 feet away, was kind of the mindset.
Yep.
I mean, he's one of those itches, so I'm pretty sure you imagine he can shoot.
For sure. And so we kind of talked about this a little bit, but one topic that I had on here is, give me something you've learned throughout this hiatus. Let's keep it with basketball for now. Could be something just really strange. Could be a player that you've seen. You know, for me, it was Petrovic. Another thing that I want to say I didn't necessarily learn, but I remembered was just how good Brad Daugherty was. I was telling you guys before we went live, I have the Cavs and Bulls from 1990 on. Jordan scores 69 points. That game's been on like 3 or 4 times since, you know, since we've been locked down. And I've seen this game a couple of times now. Brad Daugherty was a 5-time All-Star in 8 years in the Eastern Conference. In a league that was still centered on or focused on big men. In the East, it was Ewing and Daugherty, and they were pretty damn close to equals. Daugherty had back problems in 93, 94, when I think he was 27-ish, 28, and never played again. He was on his way to the Hall of Fame before injuries cut his career short. Trey, anything that that you noticed or learned throughout the time of no NBA and going back to old NBA?
So not something that I've really like learned, but just something that I've put a lot more focus on is that the time is now. When basketball finally resumes, the Celtics' time is now. Like, you know, just because Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, just because those guys are young, does not mean that we can't get ahead of the curve as far as contention goes. You know, to go back and see Paul Pierce struggled in his early days, right, all the way up to 2008 when he finally got the team put together, and you see where guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are right now, you know, in their age early on, you just would think, all right, by the time they're 25, what will they have accomplished? And then by the time they're 30, what will they have accomplished? And so you're hoping that, you know, by 25, you've already contended a few times. And so between the ages of 25 and 30, I'm really interested to know what to see on the future, what they're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with you when you say the time is now. I think this is a lesson where we need to really think about. It can all change. It can all go away in an instant. We've seen it twice with the Celtics, with Len Bias and with Reggie Lewis. The Nets saw it with Drazen Petrovic, right? We almost lost Paul Pierce a couple years into the league. Obviously, that's the most extreme circumstance, but here we have a season where some team was contending, whether it's Milwaukee. I don't like Houston, but they were up and down, and maybe they could have got hot, right? The Celtics are pretty damn close. Toronto could repeat. There's a lot of different teams where this could be their only shot. And now it's going to be gone. We look back at the 1994 baseball season, and gee, you'll probably remember this, right? The Montreal Expos had their best season ever, mm-hmm. and they never got back. They were running away with the division, and they were the heavy favorites to win the World Series when we got to that work stoppage in August. And then the series, or the season just went away, and they never came back, and the Expos never got there again. Mm-hmm. So, Trey, you said, you know, you didn't, you're not sure that you learned something. I think that's a hell of a lesson to learn is, you know, this stuff and this season is a shot that some of these teams aren't going to get back. Milwaukee wins it next year. Well, they could have been two in a row, and they're not going to have that if this season doesn't come back.
If I can just transition a little bit off of that point you made, Trey, it reminds me somewhat of how surprised more teams didn't make a play for a guy like Tom Brady. Obviously, a Bill Belichick is not going to pay for your past production. He's already paid for that. You know, Belichick's just a shrewd businessman. He's going to pay for your future production. But when you're one piece away, and maybe Tom Brady's not, you know, going to put up numbers like LaMarcus Jackson or name your quarterback, Pat Mahomes. But the point being is championship windows are not guaranteed, you know?
Right.
If anything, in basketball, you have the longest window because one player can dominate the sport for so many years. But even go back to like the 2011 Bruins. I mean, Mark, you mentioned the Expos of the 90s, but, you know, the Bruins looked like a team that could – you thought was going to win multiple titles.
Right.
Even the 2008 Celtics, even though they were aging, you thought they would win multiple titles. And an injury, you know, a trade, another player emerges in another market. Like, you never know what can happen in the future. So when you have a championship window, you have to take advantage of it. It's hard to look beyond that, look into the future. So in terms of what the things that I've learned, I have a list of things, so I'll try to be efficient with my time. One thing that I've learned is that the championship culture that we're living in the NBA is really doing a disservice to the appreciation of the game. You're watching old school games that are getting aired, and they're regular season games.
Can I stop you for a second just sure. to tell you I love you for saying that?
Like, thank you.
Appreciate rings that. Culture is the absolute fucking bane of my existence. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, I mean, and you're starting to see that because when you watch these old school games, you're able to appreciate players for their talent. Whether it was regular season playoffs, whether they got a ring or not, you know, like a Petrovic right. or a Reggie Lewis or tons and tons of guys, Dominique Wilkins, you know, lots of guys have had great NBA careers. And to sort of just...
Did Dominique not get one with the Spurs?
I don't think
so. He might have been before that. Maybe. Yeah, I think you're right.
So that's one thing. I think speaking of Tom Brady again, of course, I'm always going to point to the rings. And, you know, as a Celtics fan, we're going to point to the 17 championships. But particularly in the social media era, you can see how this rings culture is having an impact on these players. The case study for that is Kevin Durant.
Right.
You know, he went to Golden State to get that ring, to get that validation, because that's what everybody was pushing him on.
And then Twitter moved the goalpost on him and said, well, right. You got to get rings our way, not your way.
Yeah, exactly. You got, oh, well, you did it with Steph. You did it with Clay. They had already won. So that, I hope, maybe has some perspective that we're gaining during this hiatus. The regular season is important. Trey, I know you'll appreciate this one, but Paul Pierce was a beast, man.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Pierce was a beast. And Grant Williams put out there, you know, who's the third best shooting guard behind Mike and Kobe. I don't know if you consider Paul Pierce a two guard, but when you look at his, I mean, I think he averaged like 20 points a game for his first 10 games of his career as a rookie. You know, got stabbed up 11 plus times, didn't miss a game. And I just imagine if a prime LeBron or even a latter end of his prime Shaquille O'Neal, just another all-star, all-NBA caliber player teamed up with Paul Pierce early in his career. And he still gets a lot of hate, but Paul Pierce was the truth. He really was. Like, Paul Pierce was a monster, man. And that's one thing I want to get out there. Sticking with the Celtics, does anybody think that I can't believe I drew a blank on his name because I was going to bring up Larry Bird. But Luka, does anybody think Luka's a better player than Larry Bird?
Oh, God, it's too early to say that. I mean, he's too
young. Let's say at this stage in their careers – My that's a tough question to answer. My
point, yeah, flat out no.
They're different. They're different enough. Like there's the one very, or maybe the two very obvious comparisons or similarities. Like they're big white guys and they're considered less than athletic, right? At least to an NBA superstar standard. But
that's the only, and didn't Luka fall to five?
No, Luka was two, wasn't he?
I thought Luka got swapped for Trey, because it was Ayton.
Two was Sacramento.
Two was Marvin Bagley.
That was Bagley, right.
Three was Trey. Four was Jaren Jackson. Five was Luka.
Jesus, right? You're right.
Luka fell to the fifth pick because of that sort of perceived lack of athleticism. And it hasn't stopped him one bit. And my point is that Larry Bird would have dominated the NBA of today.
Oh, yes.
Dominated.
The killer instinct, the size, the shot.
Skills.
Yeah, the skills and the athleticism. People confuse athleticism with straight line speed. Right? Mm-hmm. Luka doesn't have straight line speed. Bird didn't have straight line speed. Bird had, you know, quickness. Bird had strength. Bird had pretty underrated leaping ability. Luka has an absolute elite ability to stop and change direction. Mm-hmm. And that is athleticism. Even though he doesn't look as ferocious as like LeBron dunking from the dots over someone, right? Mm-hmm. But it's still an athleticism that few people on the planet have. I think they're too different to say Luka's better or Luka's worse right now at this point, because Luka's more of a ball handler than Bird is. They play a little bit of a different style, but it's going to be, I think, a fair comparison for a long time, especially as we see Luka get better, because he's so young right now that he is going to get better.
Breaking news as we record, New York Knicks owner James Dolan has tested positive for coronavirus.
Wow.
Knicks say, this is according to Shams Charania from Yahoo, from The Athletic. But the Knicks say that James Dolan has been self-isolated, is experiencing little to no symptoms, and continues to oversee basketball operations. So there's our coronavirus update. And in that vein, maybe we should, I don't know if this was on the agenda, but maybe we can quickly talk about some of these players that have been reported to have tested positive for coronavirus, including Marcus Smart, Kevin Durant, Christian Wood, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert. Like, you know, I think like,
not a player, but Doris Burke, right?
Doris Burke, who I believe tested positive a couple of days or some time ago before it was announced on the Woj Pod the other day. Mm-hmm. Luckily, most of these folks have made full recoveries as far as we know.
Yeah, the two Utah guys are showing no symptoms, I believe.
I read that the Utah Jazz, all the Jazz players and you know, staff were cleared for coronavirus.
Yeah, and Gobert and Mitchell have at least recovered to the point where they're no longer showing symptoms. I believe I read that a couple days ago.
And I mean, pretty much this thing really, not the disease itself, but this story accelerated once the NBA suspended their season.
Oh, absolutely.
It was like, holy crap. Okay, this thing is real. A notable athlete tested positive for it. The team suspended his operation, which had a domino effect of the NHL, the MLB. The NFL hasn't really done it yet because they're a little bit further away from that, but I think that's inevitable. So it's just, you know, in our lifetime, nothing has impacted the world collectively as this has. You've been able to keep these things at a safe distance from your couch and your television, and now you can't do that anymore. I've learned a lot of things during this time, but maybe the most important thing I learned is that sports may be perhaps the one thing that unites people. More so than where you're from or what your ethnicity is or your race or your nationality, it's sports. Like if you cheer for the same team, you have something in common. You have you have one common goal, which is to see your team win. And in the absence of that, I really hope that something positive comes from this experience. I mean, not to get political, but first and foremost, you know, healthcare. You know, I hope the emphasis on healthcare kind of, now it's not just a slogan or
a high horse gesture. It's a real thing, you know. If the person next to you is healthy, then they can't pass this disease over to you.
Right. But that's what's missing in that debate is the counter argument to the universal healthcare thing is people aren't thinking about others. They're thinking about themselves. They don't think about what benefits a healthy society as a whole has. They think of how's this going to hit me in my pocket? Am I going to have to pay more money? So hopefully that changes that mindset, but you know, we'll have to see. Time will tell, because we all remember 9/11 and we thought it was going to change and unify us forever. And then a couple of months later, it's like it's like it never happened, in the sense of the two different sides kind of separating again. So,
yep.
You know, but you know, one other thing that that does bring people together aside from sports is music. And G, you've been doing this, and you're actually the inspiration for me putting this onto the agenda. You've been on Twitter every day about a classic hip hop album that you've been listening to. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I wanted to talk about that a little bit, because I saw that and I was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. And I'm like, I could do it from me too, but my shit that I listen to is so damn obscure that most people have probably never heard of it, and they'd be like, well, why do I care? But your stuff has got me thinking. Like you mentioned Supreme Clientele a couple of days ago, and that's my favorite Wu album as well, or extended Wu album. And I haven't listened to that in a long time. So it made me go back and listen to it as I was wrapping up my work from home day. So where did the idea come? What kind of was the inspiration for this idea?
We're running out of stuff to do, right?
And right.
Really for me, it was just, it's mama mentality. It's a mind frame. It's a mindset that gets you through difficult times. And aside from weed and alcohol, music can really bring your mind to a place that you want it to be. You know, whether you're getting over a breakup, whether you're getting ready for a basketball game, whether I remember we were talking about the Busta Rhymes album.
That's my basketball album. I hear that album. And I think basketball in my backyard.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it just gets you to a place. So
right.
During this time, I said, you know, I want to take a break from this kind of frivolous albums that we have out nowadays. And let me go back and just revisit an album that I haven't listened to in a while. And we're going to have a lengthy sort of semi-quarantined experience. So let me just kind of listen to a different one every day and really kind of get back into that. And also listen to some albums that, you know, I have not listened to.
Right.
But I didn't want to, and I think to your point, you know, the obscurity of stuff that you like, I think is really important, because maybe it forces somebody else to listen to something that they weren't anticipating listening to, and they like it. So,
right.
I mean, I didn't go obscure. I did the Blueprint today because I couldn't resist. I tried to go beyond the obvious, you know, the Blueprint or Illmatic or something like that. But see,
in hip hop circles, though, like Supreme Clientele is that same level of obvious. You know, that's held in that same stature.
It is for sure. I mean, but I just think it's not like Jay-Z, Nas, or
Beyonce. Right. It's not pop rap.
On another note, Pretty Tony album. I ended up listening to the Pretty Tony album, and the Pretty Tony album just brings me back to I was 04. I was in college, but. Yeah, the inspiration behind it was just, you know, I have, you know, Apple Music for me is probably the best investment one can make. So I have all dozens and dozens of albums at my fingertips. I wanted to listen to some albums that I hadn't really listened to in depth, like some old Tribe Called Quest, some Outkast albums, like a De La Soul. But I guess for it to maybe catch on, I wanted to go a little bit less obscure. So I started with Big L, The Big Picture, went to Supreme Clientele, and then I did Big Pun, Capital Punishment, and today I did The Blueprint, where it's hip-hop at home, because we're at home, so the hashtag is hashtag home hop. Hashtag home hop. Hopefully we can make this thing grow, and people can just start having that dialogue. And in the same sense that, you know, watching those old basketball games can expand sort of your horizons when it comes to your basketball perspective, maybe taking an opportunity to listen to some old school music or some classic albums can help expand your music horizons and really kind of help you channel that inner Mamba, like, you know, positivity, you know, mind over matter,
yeah,
using music to kind of occupy that space in your mind. Aside from reading, I mean, reading is great too.
Oh, sure.
I think a book club is really needed right now. Like, somebody start a book club and everybody read a book, but it's hard to get books right now.
And then congregate over Zoom, I guess, right?
Yeah, but it's hard to get books right now because all the libraries are closed. Yeah. But that was inspiration behind it. So I would love to have like a little bit of a hip hop discussion right now. Maybe talk about some of the albums that I brought up, or also, you know, throw out some of those out there that, you know, you know that one album that's semi-obscure that you suggest, you know, other people.
Yeah, I got one that I don't know if I'd even say that it's obscure, because it's like one of the prominent albums of the late 90s. Sound Bombing 2 from Ruckus Records. It's considered by many to be the best compilation album ever, or one of the best ever. That's something for you to do this weekend. It's okay. Got an absolutely loaded roster, because the Ruckus roster from the late 90s was loaded. It was Talib Kweli, Mos Def, The High and Mighty. Eminem was on this track. Eminem wasn't on Ruckus, but he has a track on this album. Common has a track on the album. Sadat X, Brand Nubian. It's just absolutely loaded from front to back, and you don't need to skip a track. Pharaoh Monch is on there. Pharaoh Monch actually has two on there. A ton of stuff. It differs enough throughout the whole thing too. You don't feel like you're listening to the same thing over and over again. There's a Company Flow song on there. There's just a little bit of everything. You would have to get it on YouTube, because the Ruckus, when they were at their quote unquote peak, they had a loaded roster, but they had terrible distribution. So the rights to their albums bounced around. A lot of albums got pushed back. Some never got released. So Sound Bombing 2 is actually not on Spotify. It might be on Apple Music, but probably not. Some of those albums, the solo albums, are starting to pop up on Spotify. Pharaoh Monch, Internal Affairs, is another one I recommend. That's one of my all-time favorites. That's one of the ones from that Ruckus label. That just showed up a couple of months ago. I have it on CD, so I've had it forever, but it is pretty new to Spotify. And I think it actually has a release date on there of like 2019 or 2020, because they just put in the date that it was uploaded. And then there's one more. I know you're more of an East Coast guy, but Razzcaz, Soul on Ice from 1996 is an underground classic. It didn't do well commercially because of no promotion on the labels, poor distribution, but it got to the point where, like, in the late 90s, early 2000s, where it was held in that high regard. And actually, if you went on eBay to look for the CD, it was going to cost you about $50, because there weren't that many out there. And anybody who wanted it, that was their only way to get it, was to get a copy that was somehow left over. Go straight to the track Nature of the Threat, where Raz gives about an 8-minute... that's the one. Yep. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't.
No, you would dig that track. It's basically 8 minutes of just the story of and history of racism from ancient times to current times. And it's pretty wild. Just the amount of, you know, work and effort and research that went into it is mind blowing. And any list of like top lyricists that you see come out, like, he's on there, whether he's had commercial success or not, you'll see him come up in those conversations, and you get to see like the full extent of his abilities there. So check that one out. Give the rest of the album a listen. It might not be exactly your thing, because as you said on one of the earlier episodes, like, you're an East Coast, you know, New York hip hop kind of guy. And he's, you know, born and bred in, you know, in LA, but those are the two that I go with. And I really found that from your post, especially with when you posted the screen cap of the Capital Punishment track you were listening to today, the one with Black Thought, I thought, like, damn, I need to listen to The Roots more. Yeah. Because that is a major hole for me. I have a ton of stuff where Black Thought's featured, and I listen to this dude and I'm like, he is exactly what I listen to. And I just never really got around to it.
I mean that track with Pun, super lyrical with Black. I mean, Black Thought is, you can't leave Black Thought off of any best rappers list.
Like, right. Yeah. And it's just like, it's a hole in my game. Like, I never really got around to grabbing any of their stuff. I don't own any Roots albums. So that's one that I got to get to. And the one that, another one that I was going to have originally for my, you know, one that I need to listen to was J-Live. He released back-to-back underground classics, 2001 and 2002, The Best Part, and then All of the Above. Mm-hmm. And I just thought of those when you mentioned ones you need to listen to. I was like, I haven't listened to those since like 2003 or four. And, but it doesn't count now because I've been listening to them nonstop since yesterday. So.
Yeah. I mean, and why not? You know what, you know, we have the time,
right?
You know, if you work from home and have it going in the background, and maybe you're getting some exercise, maybe you're doing some spring cleaning.
Yeah.
Whatever. Just take that opportunity and get some music in, man. Right. I was kind of wanted to maybe do this little game where you have like the NBA equivalent of that rapper. Like, who's the Black Thought of the NBA? Like, somebody that was super nice, but didn't have his own sneaker deal, you know, wasn't the most popular player in the league, but was anybody who played with them respected him.
Off the top, I'd love to be able to prepare this. This might be a good later pod, but
yeah, maybe we should be definitely later. We got to think about it.
Bernard King? Segment. You know, Bernard King?
Okay. Bernard,
he's kind of forgotten.
Yeah. I might have to limit my distance to like Magic and Bird.
Yeah, he played in the 80s, so.
Yeah, but I mean, Bernard King was drafted in the 70s, I believe. No?
Close. I'm not totally sure when he was drafted, but, you know, he might have been more into the 80s. He definitely, like, he played in the 80s, but.
Let's think of 90s basketball.
Okay, 90s basketball. Shit. You got me on the spot, because someone who was good enough for who could be like pound for pound the best out there, but doesn't really get that respect. Like that's
yeah, hard. Yeah. I have to think
because in the NBA, like typically, if you're that good, you get the respect, especially 90s and after when it started to become mm-hmm. more national. You know, you might see it in football a little more where there are teams that just didn't get the exposure. Falcons before Vic, Saints before Breeze. If you were a great player on those teams, it didn't matter. Nobody knew who you were. That doesn't happen as much anymore. So Black Thought.
So one, I know this is a stretch, but the Carter II, Lil Wayne, the Carter II. I know you're not a Lil Wayne guy, and I'm not even gonna say I'm a Lil Wayne guy per se.
Yeah, if you want a Lil Wayne comparison,
the Carter II, a Lil Wayne. I'm very interested in hearing you.
Lil Wayne is like, I don't know. Brad Wanamaker, because like if you've only seen Brad Wanamaker play, you're gonna think he's a great basketball player, but if you've seen other people play, you're like, I don't know, he's not that good.
Listen to the Carter II.
Yeah,
it's I'm just saying,
we
the Carter II is when Lil Wayne got my respect, and it was before the lean and all that stuff started coming into play, but it was a little bit beyond like Hot Boys, Cash Money, like just straight Louisiana shit. But the Carter II might make my list of albums in the upcoming, in the days to come in the future.
All right. I trust your judgment. So I will try it, but I can't guarantee I get through more than two tracks.
That's totally right. Fine. But if it was a Lil Wayne album, my Carter II's my favorite Lil Wayne album. I haven't really listened to anything beyond Carter III, but Lil Wayne is, you know, Lil Wayne's been out since he was like 12 years old or something.
Yeah. No matter what he does, even if he has stuff that I dive into on a deeper dive and find out that, hey, this isn't that bad, I do like it. Lil Wayne to me will always be remembered as a master ace punchline on a diss track to the High and Mighty and the Boogeyman, who was, I'm sure, nobody who never became anything after Master Ace, the legend, mm-hmm. killed him. Not literally killed him, but you know what I mean. He said, I heard your album. This must be something you knew at, because I'd rather hear a Lil Wayne, Lil Zane duet. And and that is Lil Wayne to me forever. So, I mean, Master Ace has been around since the 80s with the Juice Cruise. So, mm-hmm. you know, that guy, that's another one you got to check out if you haven't. He's from Brooklyn, so you know, I think you'd enjoy that, especially Disposable Arts. So,
Trey, I know you're feeling like, you know, you're not old enough to get in the club with this conversation, but
he's got ID. He's good.
What's a modern hip hop classic?
I mean, earlier I was listening to The Becoming, Benny Siegel.
Okay. I would, okay.
That's around that time. Let's see.
Is that his, was that his first? No, the Truth was his first album. The Truth. The Reason, in my opinion, was his best album. So The Becoming must have been after that.
Man, I totally forgot about that dude.
Beanie Siegel. Beanie Siegel, The Truth is, I mean, The Reason is a dope album.
It's solid.
I really like Outkast.
Outkast.
All right, quick one, just like one or two word answer. Best Outkast album to you.
Stankonia.
You're a Stankonia guy, okay.
Yep.
Gemini.
I'm ATLians all the way.
I'm going to say there's also ATLians.
So. Yeah, that's my jam.
Okay. Okay. I want to go back to the modern classics, like in the past 10 years.
Yeah, no, and you guys can carry the load on this one because I got my old guys that I listen to.
Yeah.
And when they have new stuff come out, I get into it. Like Razzcast just released Soul on Ice too. But new people, I'm not really checking out.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. I mean, maybe we should save this discussion for another time because we could go on forever with this type of discussion and music. But yeah, man, I definitely, if you guys can use the hashtag home hop and try to get this thing, you know, expanded, get the conversation going, that would be cool.
Yeah. Let's do that. I think we need to, I mean, if it's home hop, we got to talk Boston, right?
Mm.
Boston is, it's not New York. It's not LA, right? We know that, but there's a lot of talent here.
Maybe that's what I need to listen to, some Boston artists, because that's not my expertise.
Acrobatic Balance.
All right.
Listen to that one. I know Acrobatic. That album, it's a more conscious album. It's incredible. It was 2002, 2003.
To me, it's L.O.G., I guess, who's my
L.O.G. is a good one.
My favorite Boston artist.
Boston's a small town, so let's count the suburbs. Esoteric's from Beverly. Esoteric is outstanding. He's got some stuff actually with Inspected Deck. They made a couple of compilation albums, which is a surprise. Sarface, and I haven't dove into that as much, but they complement each other really well.
Do you remember that the Home album?
When you said home hop, that image came into my head.
That's something I got to put out there because I can't forget my man Rex is on that album.
He is.
And Rex is actually a close friend of the family.
Oh, right. Nice.
Yeah. Like, you know, extended family, family. Rex. Rex is the man, too. He was nice.
He was.
He still is. And I'm sure he's still doing a lot of music, doing a lot of shows.
Yeah.
Way beyond Boston.
He was nice. Chan was nice on that album.
Chan, yes.
Crumb Snatcher was nice. Crumb Snatcher really kind of fell off the face of the earth.
I would never put Ray Benzino in this conversation.
Nope.
But Hangman 3, in terms of just production, Benzino's album that he came out with, the Benzino Project, the production on that album was tight. Like you put another rapper on there and with the connections that he had through Dave Mays and The Source,
right?
You know, like Mob Prodigy and Mobb Deep was on that album, and like Diddy and Bobby Brown, like he had a lot of solid features on that album. But Benzino himself, the rhymes are kind of whack. But Hangman 3 production was sick.
Trey, yeah, during my time off, I was looking up the Source Awards and like, you know, kind of like what happened and all that stuff, because I've had a lot of time to be on YouTube. So that was one of the things that
I believe Razzcast was arrested at the Source Awards too.
What hasn't happened at the Source
Awards? He jumped. Exactly. He like left the state. He was on probation. And like went to the, I think it might have been the Source Awards. It might have been the BET Awards. I can't remember which one it was, but like he was arrested either at the show or like going to the show or something. It was wild.
Who's your guilty, what's your guilty pleasure album or your guilty pleasure artist?
I don't feel guilt around any, it's like I like what I like, but okay. I get large quantities of shit from everyone, including Bomani Jones. Whenever I mention that, I still love cannabis.
You do get shit about that.
But and he's got some bad albums because his ear for production is like that of a deaf man. It's unbelievable. It's all military drums and like a lot of like static noise and voiceovers, mm-hmm. But the lyrics are unmatched.
Trey,
he has an infinite rhyme. That's all I gotta say. He has an infinite rhyme.
Can I buzz? I remember back in the days, it was DMX versus Cannabis. Who's the better new artist?
Oh yeah, DMX is a better musician. Cannabis is a better rapper. Like that's it.
So DMX, by musician you mean like artist?
Yeah, yeah. He makes better songs. He makes better albums. Aside from Rip the Jacker, which was an album that Cannabis. It was Cannabis's acapellas put over Stoop from Jedi Mind Tricks Beats, and it was all cut and paste because Cannabis was actually in the military at the time and didn't have any say over it. He listened to it for the first time when it was the finished product. So he had no say in the musical aspect of it, and it's considered his best album.
Trey, you got a guilty pleasure album or artist?
I listen to a lot of 90s music, so a lot of people are listening to newer stuff. So
what might you bump in your AirPods that you wouldn't necessarily play when all your boys came over to your crib? This is a safe space. This is a safe space. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, it's all right. No one's listening. We're not releasing it, right?
Probably some Lauryn Hill or something like that.
Lauryn Hill, the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is Lauryn Hill was like Drake before Drake. I don't know if that's disrespecting either one of them, but
it's not. It's just because, like I said, we're in modern times. A lot of people aren't listening to that stuff now. So
Lauryn Hill, I mean, Lost Ones, that track right there is one of my favorite rap, hip hop, whatever. Yo, Lauryn Hill could spaz, and she like swept the Grammys that year. So
and she was in Sister Act too.
At the same damn time, I think for me, man, yo, when I was growing up. I was all about Bad Boy. I was bad boy. Yeah. I was Bad Boy for life back then, man. Okay. So I'll still bump Harlem World. I will play
Harlem World. I'm pitching on that.
I will play Harlem World. And Mace was like, Mace had an arc where he was like up and coming. And then he was through Biggie's shadow. And then he was just kind of like part of the rotating door of Puff sidekicks. And, you know, he got punched in the face. Like Mace was kind of like... He sold records, and he's like, hey, whatever works, it sells. But I wouldn't say he was a highly respected amongst his peers.
He wasn't, but he had rhymes. You know what I'm saying?
He did. Like, I mean, when I listened to Mace.
Well, he did because people were writing for him.
What you know about Head West?
Skills wrote for him.
Up in the headrest.
Matt Skills was supposedly writing for a lot of people.
He was.
But Mace has such a unique – I mean, I know Mace wrote a lot of Diddy stuff.
Yeah, so, Skills wrote a lot of Diddy's too. Diddy never, I don't know if I want to say Diddy never wrote anything, but Diddy didn't write much of anything. Neither did Dr. Dre. One of my favorite hip hop pastimes is listening to a Dr. Dre verse and trying to figure out who wrote it based on the flow he's using.
You can
clearly tell, like, hey, Big Daddy Kane wrote that verse for Dre.
Or Jay. Jay wrote a lot of his verses.
Jay wrote Still DRE.
Yeah, you can hear
it. It says S. Carter in the booklet.
Yeah, like you can hear Jay-Z like in that rhyme. But Dre was good enough to be able to spit somebody else's rhyme.
He was a producer and he had the presence. So like it works. Yeah. He's a musician. He's not, you know, no one's gonna call him an MC, but he's a musician.
Right. But yeah, I'll bump me some Harlem World. I don't care what nobody says.
I thought of one that I guess that would be considered a guilty pleasure. Coolio. Right. Gangsta's Paradise, and not just the song, that whole damn album is good. I listened to that album like within the last year. I was just going through like my old CD book and I was like, oh, I'm gonna listen to this out of curiosity and it's probably gonna be horrible. And I put it on in my car and I was like, I was really getting into it. I was like, this is, and a lot of it was flashbacks to when I was like in middle school, but like it wasn't bad.
Also, another one of mine is Memphis Bleak. I would bump some Memphis Bleak's albums too.
Yeah.
Especially the first Memphis Bleak.
I had that. You know, I let someone borrow it. And I don't remember who, so I never got it back.
When Jay-Z came out with Volume 2 and Bleak, you know, he had the, you know, we used to have that dude Pain in the Ass doing all the intros.
Uh-huh.
He's like, Bleak's going to be a good rapper. New, improved Jay-Z. Like, you couldn't tell me that Bleak wasn't the next one to take over rap, and it never happened.
But, a lot of those next to take over don't happen.
I don't care what none of y'all say. I'll listen to some Memphis Bleak. I'll listen to some Mace, and that's That's all I got to say.
Yep. I went to a cannabis show within the last year, so I'm right on there with you with stuff that doesn't really pass the test of time. Yeah, right. No, love Bomani, but
I'm with you on Mace. I'm with you on that one.
Actually, me and Adam ain't on here, but me and Adam might have bumped the Benzino project on a few occasions.
I remember
Adam knows about those days.
I remember you and Adam in my car just like obsessively bumping CNN.
CNN, Capone and Noriega. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And that's not even a guilty one. Any
no, it's not. Real, it's,
yeah.
Nori brings the comic relief.
Yeah, Nori is a character, man. Nori actually was the first one to probably really put the Neptunes on. When the Neptunes produced for Nori, that's when everybody started jumping on the Neptunes. Yeah. N-O-R-E, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's on Pun's album.
Yeah, yeah. So that kind of went for a while.
Hey, that was, yeah.
And it's good stuff. And I love talking about, we'll definitely have to get into and do that again. And I got to say, you got me on board for Home Hop. So I'm going to start sending out some of my stuff. Check it out. I'll put some of the stuff that we talked about on there. It's a little obscure, but it's not like really weird shit. I can find some of that too, but nobody's gonna like Cannibal Ox. So
it's Twitter, man. You'd be surprised.
Well, the people that like when I say nobody, I mean like you guys and Adam. Like, you're not gonna like Cannibal Ox. It's, listen to a track, you'll know what I mean. I can't even describe it. Talent's there, it's not music. But I think this is a good time to wrap it up. We've been going for a little while. I can't even figure how long it's been because we don't have a clock on this thing. But we'll be talking more hip-hop. I definitely want to do that basketball player rapper comparison. I think that's a great topic. We'll maybe do that next time. And I want to put it out here so that we get committed to do it. I definitely want to watch some old games and do some commentary to those. We've been talking about doing that for a long time. So here we go. We're on the record. People who are listening to this, now they're expecting it. So we got to do it. So some of those to come, we'll figure out how to do it. Work in progress.
One quick thing before we go, I just want to say that like when basketball finally resumes, we're going to see what GMs are made of, just what the scouting they're able to do with the prospects without March Madness happening and, you know, the hyping of all of these players. Really going to be a good time to see when the NBA draft comes and who drafts what players.
It's going to be a wild draft.
So I'm interested to know what Danny Ainge is doing right now.
Yeah, when basketball returns, when life returns, somebody put it online, but from now on, I'm going to everything I get invited to. I'm not passing on anything anymore. You invite me, I'm there. it was much better staying in the house and or declining invitations when like stuff was still going on.
Right.
And I could like kind of be cool and like, nah, I'm just gonna stay home. Y'all go ahead. And just kind of vicariously live through other people.
Yeah.
Now you can't vicariously live through anyone. No one's doing anything. So
Go on IG. Back
to normal, man. Make sure y'all hit me up, man. Invite me to something.
I remember next time Cannabis is at the Shaskeen, we're going.
Maybe.
I see what you're doing that night. Solid maybe. All right, great. Well, this was fun, guys. Thanks for jumping on and for getting into everything. It's great to see some faces, even though it's just on Zoom. And we'll be back soon with some of the topics that we just talked about, or maybe something that we think about between now and then. Who knows? When inspiration hits us, it's just going to go. So that'll do it for us. You can follow us at Section 5 on Twitter, Instagram. We have a Facebook page. It's fundamentally useless because Facebook changed their algorithm, but go ahead and give us a like anyway. And follow each of us on Twitter. I'm at MFury38. G, where can they find you in Home Hop?
At GWebster_MBA.
And Trey?
At What Trey Says.
What Trey Says.
All right, and that'll do it for us, and we'll see you next time.
Stay home.